A Wednesday Evening Lenten Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on March 12, 2003, entitled The Question of God and Human Meaning. Copyright Grand Valley State University. Please note that the original recording spanned two sides of a cassette tape, so there was some missing material. I will bridge the gap.
The question of God and human meaning. I was with the eighth graders Sunday morning for a little while, and it's always open season on the pastor when that happens. They write out questions on cards, and it's rather fun. And one of them said, how often do you read the Bible? And I confessed with him that I have a very poor devotional life. Never been very successful in cultivating a devotional life that was rich and rewarding. I'm always thinking about what I really want to be doing. But I said, on the other hand, I live in that book, and I always have. And that's the way it is with the question of God, too. It's my daily meditation and frustration and exhaustion. I suppose that I have to confess that I'm not a normal human being. A normal human being wouldn't be in this business I'm in. And I have no illusion about the fact that just because I'm always fretting about the question of God, that most people who come to church are like that. So I'm aware of the fact that sometimes I must bore you to tears, wrestling with questions about which you really probably don't really care to wrestle. Just tell me how to get from Monday to Saturday, right? And keep it practical, keep it simple, keep it short. So on a Lenten midweek service, I raised the question of God and human meaning. Typical of me. That's my obsession, so forgive me. But on the other hand, even a normal human being, from time to time, I think, wrestles with the question of God, and it comes particularly probably at those crisis points, those limit situations in our human experience. Because we are meaning-seeking creatures, and we do ask those ultimate questions about why, and from whence, and whither, and why is there something rather than nothing? And those questions really, finally, have very practical implications. And they're really questions about God and human meaning. I mentioned last week the book entitled The Question of God. It's an interesting book, in which Armand Nicolai puts C.S. Lewis and Sigmund Freud in conversation with each other. And I mentioned last week Freud and Lewis in relationship to death, the question of death. But that was only one chapter. He begins more with this question of meaning and God. And with Sigmund Freud, once again, if you've ever read his thin little The Future of an Illusion, you don't have to be put off by Freud, that simple little paperback. Pick it up sometime. It's very easy to read. And in there, he very clearly acknowledges himself as a rather militant, aggressive atheist who believes that if he would work for the psychological health of humankind, what he needs to do is rid us of the infantile idea of God, because he says, really, it is that longing for a parent, for the Father. And the ambivalence we feel toward the Father, but nonetheless, down deep, the insecurity of the human situation welling up within us so that there is that deep longing for security and for comfort. And it makes a lot of sense, and there's a lot of truth in it. There's no question about that. Freud thinks, however, that what we have to do is grow up. And Nikolai, in his book, talking about Freud, has that in bold letters with an exclamation point. Freud would say, grow up. Get over it. C.S. Lewis was an atheist until his adult life when he was teaching at in the great British universities. And he came to his Christian faith later. And he came to a really very traditional understanding of the Christian faith. The Creator, creating the world, and the world going awry because of the freedom given to the human creature. And C.S. Lewis, in his very traditional explanation of the human story, speaks about a dark power that is operative in the world. And he talks about this terrible, terrible human story with its war and its violence and its rape and its so on. And why would a good God, a creator, why would God create a world where all of this darkness would be so prevailing? And he says, and again, a rather traditional answer, because the world could only, only if there was granted freedom of the will to choose or not, was there the possibility of love and joy and grace and so forth. And C.S. Lewis, the bold letters with the exclamation point are, wake up. He was an apologist for the faith. He wrote a number of things in which he was trying to make the case. In fact, I think one of his most popular books is Mere Christianity, but he was always making the case for Christianity, and he had a book on miracles and the problem of pain and so forth. So there you have it. It's a nice juxtaposition. Freud says, grow up. Lewis says, wake up. Freud's materialism is really drab and dreary. And this is all there is. And the only knowledge possible is the knowledge that's a consequence of research. Lewis has a much, he has the traditional Christian hope and the joy and all of that. And Lewis would claim that there is knowledge possible through revelation. And so there you have it. Freud saying the only knowledge we can have is knowledge of experimentation, research. Grow up. Lewis says no. No, there's a revelatory moment. Wake up. I don't feel satisfied with Freud. You'll be happy about that. But I'm not really happy with Lewis either, because I don't like the biblical story of creation in perfection with the fall, and then to see this, the whole human story as a story of darkness and alienation, as though the Creator's intentions have been foiled, so that what we have in the world is not at all the reflection of what the Creator intended, but it's an alienated world. It's a flawed reality. I don't like that anymore. I've had enough of that. Enough of that negativity, enough of that darkness, enough of this whole description of the human situation, of history, and of the cosmos in terms of fallenness. Now, am I naive about the darkness? Well, how could I be naive about the darkness in this present moment in world history? Is there any conceivable darkness of which we are not capable? No. Don't hear me whitewashing the situation as though there isn't really any evil or darkness. No, that obviously you have to have your eyes closed if you would deny the potential for and the actuality of awful darkness in the human situation. But more and more, I don't want to understand it. I certainly don't want to I can't go along with Freud and a kind of materialism where there's just nothing. But neither does it resonate with me anymore that there's a God who is a kind of supernatural being who is really just a human being writ large who, to use C.S. Lewis's phrase, and as soon as I read it, my hackles go up because I'm so sensitive to it now. He says, this Creator God who steps into history. Anytime God is stepping into history, it's a God that I don't believe in anymore. Because it's a God out there somewhere who is apart from this reality of which we're a part, who dips in now and again. And you know, if we're really honest with human experience, that God dipping in now and again, you tell me about an answer to prayer, I'll tell you about a non-answer. You tell me about a miraculous rescue, I'll tell you where it all came to nothing. And so we religious people, we really have had selective memory and selective reporting because we want God to be there doing these wonderful things. But as a matter of fact, if we're honest, this is a random human experience. The psalmist knew that a long time ago. The psalmist, two or three psalms who struggle with this problem, they say, why do the wicked prosper and the righteous go suffering on their way? I mean, if God is up there playing dominoes with us, then why don't things always work out right? And the only way we can get away with holding to that is by saying, well, we'll understand by and by. Isn't there a better way? Don't we know a lot of things today that could help us to reimagine the question of God in human meaning? Certainly, the Hebrew, the faith of Israel was profound, and Micah's paean of praise to God, who is a God like thee? This was a God of forgiveness and of grace and of steadfast love. But it still was that old theistic God out there, controlling pretty much the history of Israel and the world. But I wonder if John wasn't trying to get at something different. Or he begins, in the beginning was the Word. And then this Word takes on human flesh. And then in verse 18 he says that the Son is the interpretation of that infinite mystery. That word out of eternity, becoming human, becomes the interpretation of that mystery that is God. And in the Johannine circle from which we have the letter of John, we have in that fourth chapter those familiar words, "And God is love." So that the God that was seen in Jesus is understood as a God who is love and experienced in human love. So God emerges in the human. The infinite comes to expression in the finite. That sacred and holy mystery takes on human flesh, and then in the human encounter, that God is experienced. The one who abides in love abides in God, and God abides in that one. So that I think John is trying to say, and this is how John experienced Jesus, is that it was the infinite sacred and holy mystery that we call God, that which is ultimate, that which is the source and the ground of all, that which is the creative heart of all, that has come into human form, and in that human form, and where there is human, there is consciousness and awareness, and there is relationship, and there is a possibility of love and grace. And where that is going on, well, my God. God. Not from some other realm dipping in now and again, but within this whole play on whose stage we are the actors, within this cosmic, earthly, human story, we find God, we experience God in the action of love. And so that's what that early community saw in Jesus. Jesus who when they said the Greeks want to see you, must have something triggered according to John's story again. And he said, "Now is my hour." And you didn't have to be a rocket scientist to know that things were heating up. And then he starts to struggle. He said, "If a grain of wheat abides alone, that's it. But if it falls into the ground and dies, it bears fruit." So Jesus is struggling now. Jesus, the human, but the human who is the manifestation of the infinite, the human who is trying to go with the grain of the universe, as it were. And he says, "What shall I say? Father, save me from this hour, but for this hour came I forth. Glorify your name." So here is a human being who is conscious of being an expression of God, who understands that he is called to do something, and he struggles, but he does it. It's his truth. It's his passion. It's his vision. It's his life. God, you see, the question of God and human meaning, when we focus that question on Jesus, we see one who was understood to be a finite concretion of the infinite mystery, and what came to expression in that human was an expression of God. And in that human had to determine whether to respond to the deep urging of his being, whether to respond to what he saw, whether to own his own vision and his own truth, whether to live out his passion.
You see, the question of God can become quite personal. It brings us to face that for which we are willing to live at whatever cost.
And not meaning to be overly dramatic, but that for which we would even die. Because to be human, is to be faced again and again and again with that question of, will I just go along? Will I just be a member of my tribe, my nation, my community? Will I just sit there and stew when I have a deep, deep intuition about something, a deep conviction? Or will I understand myself as the outcropping of God? So that I have a sense that through my human flesh, God would speak, God would be embodied. God's will, if you will, intention, would come to concretion. Freud said, that's all ridiculous. There's nobody or nothing. It's just you now. C.S. Lewis said there's a God out there who steps into human history. I think I hear John trying to give expression to the fact that God is within the mix, that God comes to expression within the story. And the story has all of its dark shadows because the God who's coming to expression in us is coming to expression in the human animal that bears all the traces of that long climb toward humanity. And it really seems to me that the thing that's constantly before us is if we will continue to act according to our animal nature, or if we will yield to that beckoning of the Spirit within us that calls us to live our truth, to live our passion, to be true, to be people of integrity and honesty, to be people marked by love and grace and forgiveness and understanding, and well, Jesus said, by their fruits, you'll know. And the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness. So you see, the question of God gets right down to how we live every day. And it's our image of God. We will tend to take on the image of God that lives within us. We could talk about that one for another hour, but I won't.